unqualified success.
Now get the guns, the drugs from my generation.
Years ago, I took on every wrestling promoter throughout North America. I kicked every one of their asses.
The fraud, the messer with me.
In a court of law, I took on the United States of America, and I kicked her ass. I took on WCW, and it took me a while, but I kicked their asses. Not because I was an asshole, no, no. Ask me, Mr. McMahon, what's your secret? More than any one quality that makes me the successful man that I am, ruthless aggression. So I want to know here tonight, as you stand here on my ring, which one of you has that quality? Who among you has that one single ingredient? Who has enough ruthless aggression?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
North South Podcast Speed. Listeners, welcome again to another episode of the Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast. I am, as always, your host, Jake. I have a returning guest who actually, I think, was on here the last time I had a go-home show because, of course, this episode, we're going to cover the go-home episodes of Raw and SmackDown leading into Judgment Day 2002. So at this point, it almost feels like this guest is sort of my go-home man. He is the host of a brand new podcast that I was on the first episode of that is really awesome, NWA Croc and Roll, which is a good podcast. He comes on a TNA podcast with me. He's on Chicken Salad. He's doing a lot of things. He just seems to be becoming more and more active in the podcasting game. Mr. Sean Kidd, how are you doing, Sean?
I'm doing great, Jake. It's great to be back here on the Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast. I had a great time last time, and I don't mind being the go-home guy. It's going to be an interesting watch. We were talking before we started recording that a lot of the same stuff seems to be going on, just different avenues and different tweaks to it. So I look forward to doing this podcast, and as always, it's still one of my favorites. So I'm super happy to be here again.
Yeah, and I know even though you're not on every episode, like most people have on, you've still kind of been following the timeline. And so it'll be interesting because it's been about at least a month as far as what we're covering on the show since you're on last. So I could kind of get your opinions overall, since a lot of this is a lot of the same angles that have developed, kind of like what your opinions are over, not just on these actual shows, but you can kind of also give me how you felt about the last month of TV, kind of summarize your feelings. So I'm interested to hear.
Absolutely.
All right. So what I've been doing recently that I'll continue is before we actually get into the episodes of Raw and SmackDown, we're going to go through a few news and notes that are basically plucked from Meltzer, from the Wrestling Observer. So the first thing, we have a few, as me and Mr. Gruenberg talked about last time. The plane ride from hell had just happened on the way back from Insurrection. We have some reports of some other fallout from that incident as the news of that continues to trickle out. So as we're going to see on these episodes, Scott Hall is officially going to be fired. Me and Grinny talked about this last time that he was on the last Raw, but I feel like that was just a matter of them having to have him on there because things are already planned out for that show. The show was already laid out, and he was kind of integral to it, so they couldn't get rid of them. But that was the last time he is fired. And another casualty of that is going to be Kurt Hennig, who we've seen a few times through this timeline in sort of random matches quite a few times. But he is also going to be fired because he was on the plane ride. The most famous thing is he was trying to pick a fight with Brock Lesnar. I say, well, not really a fight. I guess it goes that he was trying to almost like shoot fight him, like like almost amateur wrestling, which doesn't seem smart.
Yeah, I was going to say, that seems like a really good that seems like a really good idea to do on an airplane of all places, right?
So supposedly now, you know, all this, it's almost like urban legend at this point, this whole plane ride thing. But supposedly, like when they were scuffling, they, at one point they went to the they almost hit like the emergency handle or whatever it is on the door in the plane, which you can only imagine the people in this plane. Like if this plane goes down because of some dumb shit like that with all these, you know, with the level of people on here, it would have been like, you know, the day the music died, except for wrestling.
Yeah, it would have been catastrophic.
Yeah. So he, I feel like part of this too is they probably felt, especially Kurt Hennig, that he was probably kind of expendable. It's not like he was super important right here. So he is fired. Also, so Arn and Michael Hayes both got a ton of shit for it because they were supposed to be sort of the authority figures on this plane ride. They're supposed to keep an eye on everyone and keep everybody in line. So they kind of got their asses chewed, especially Hayes, because not only did he not do that, but he was reportedly one of the worst as far as like causing havoc. So has famously got his ponytail chopped off by X-Pac, and just he was just being typical obnoxious Michael Hayes, I guess. So we talked about this last time, Sean. You have any feelings? I thought you'd be an interesting view on this because you work in a job where you have to travel quite a bit. Has this ever happened on any of your business dealings as far as travel?
Well, not necessarily on a plane, but, you know, when you travel a lot, especially when you go to big meetings and stuff like that, so I imagine there's a lot of this that happens. But, you know, you get people that get drunk, they go to the bar. I can remember one meeting we had somewhere in Nashville where I think 30 people got fired for destroying a hotel room. So this stuff does happen in any career. I can't recall any of this happening on a plane per se. So it's a legendary plane ride from hell. You know, you could listen to Jim Ross. You know, I think his pod probably covers it. But a lot of stories came out of that plane from hell ride. And yeah, so Kurt Hennig being fired, again, he wasn't doing much. It was great to see Kurt back for the short time he was back, but he was doing a lot of jobs. And Scott Hall, you know, obviously Scott Hall was fired, but we get to see Scott Hall in our other pod, or I guess JT does on their other pod in a few weeks. So it's he actually goes on and does something else and actually looks better at it. So good for Scott Hall.
Yeah, he finds work still. I mean, he
sure does.
Yeah, so we'll have no more. So also is said that because of this, they are not allowed to have alcohol on their chartered planes anymore.
Seems like a good idea. I wonder how long that lasted.
Yeah, that's right. But I talked about this last time, but I feel like a lot of this stuff, like to me, the plane ride sort of signifies and a few things that are going to happen pretty soon with specifically a very major name, Stone Cold. And just with them having to take the change the F and all that kind of stuff, I feel like this is just signifying sort of the, I hate to say downturn, because I don't think these next few years are like, it's not like were there any danger of going out of business or anything like that, but they're just, you could see them kind of leveling down, like business is starting to decrease a little bit from where it was the previous year, couple of years where they were like, seem to be like on cloud nine and invincible, that this is just, to me, the plane ride sort of signifies that them sort of coming back down to earth a little bit. And that's just a kind of a black mark on this time period, but it always seems to me like kind of a demarcation of when things start to kind of turn down and get a little messy in these next few years.
That's really deep, Jake, and a really good way to look at it, but man, that's really deep.
Yeah, I mean, it just, it's, you know, like they're gonna lose. I mean, Rock is pretty much one foot out the door at this point. You know, Austin is obviously going to do his famous thing within the next month or so. You know, there's already reports that the ratings, like we talked about last time, the ratings, we had some kind of record low ratings that they were hitting. So it's just, you know, things are not going as swimmingly for them as they have, but I mean, they're still super successful. Don't get me wrong. It's not, you know, it's not like a, you know, early 90s thing where they were, you know, they didn't know if they're going to go out of business. I think it's just, I just think it's something that kind of lingers in the back during this whole era, is them almost kind of going in this transition rebuilding sort of period. But let's talk about TNA. So the Jarrett's new promotion reportedly will be called Jerry and Jeff Jarrett's new promotion will be called NWA Total Nonstop Action. They plan to start with weekly pay-per-views because they don't really have a TV deal yet. Meltzer reports that he thinks it will probably be difficult for them to turn any kind of profit with this model, as the cost of doing pay-per-view is extremely high. And to basically break even or start turning any profit, they would need about 50,000 buys a week, which he says will be very difficult considering that towards the end, WCW, even with the amount of named stars that they had, were struggling to get that many buys on their pay-per-views, and they had stud weekly TV to help get some exposure. So he kind of says that it's going to be an uphill climb for them. So Sean, you obviously know a lot about TNA. You're one of our TNA experts on the podcast that we do, Highway to the Impact Zone. So were you, was this on your radar at the time? We probably talked about this on that pod, but
yeah,
like, were you buying these?
Yeah, we talked a little bit about that at the beginning of the first episode, but yeah, I was definitely into it. You know, I was definitely starving for something else to come along since WCW had gone away, and actually WCW for me had gone away a long time before it actually did, because it was really bad for the last year or so. So it was good to hear that something new was coming along, and I did buy the weekly pay-per-views, and they were a little rough to start. And it's really cool to hear the North-South pod, you know, the pod that you guys are doing on this feed now, because you can go back and relive those memories, and, you know, it's a little rough to hear it, but it's amazing to me. Here's what's amazing. You talk about it would be tough for them to turn a profit. Well, they didn't turn a profit for, let's see, they started in 2002. I don't think they're still turning a profit, and they're still around, which is crazy, insane, yeah. Right? And now they're at a point now where they just added all these names that the WWE just released. So TNA is an enigma. It's just an enigma that is, you know, from the start, people didn't think it was going to last, and here it is. It's outlived WCW, and it's still here today. It's really impressive if you think about it. But yeah, I was super excited when I heard it was starting, and I was willing to shell out the $10 a month, or $10 a week, to watch it.
Well, they're big names. You're probably looking to see. So Meltzer reports that the big names for TNA are going to be AJ Styles, Road Dogg, Disco Inferno, Brian Christopher, Shane Douglas, Conan, and also Ken Shamrock has signed a kind of a them to work something like 20 shows or something like that. So that is sort of your ragtag group of quote-unquote big names that TNA is bringing in. And it's also reported that they plan to sort of have a southern feel, quote-unquote, and rely on shock value, which Meltzer pretty much says is, you know, code for like the Russo style of booking, which even we're in 2004 on our podcast for TNA, and we see quite a bit of that shock value Russo style stuff still happening at that point a few years in. So yeah,
in retrospect we should be really unhappy that Road Dogg and Conan were added, because we're still dealing with that in today's pod that we do. So
so they are on the horizon. In just a couple weeks they will be here. Past the TNA news, Kurt Angle told the Pittsburgh TV station that he plans to train and enter the 2004 Olympics, and that WWE reportedly will actually pay his downside even while he's training and not really working for them. I'm assuming because the publicity for them would be great if they had somebody in the Olympics. But this was not really on my radar. I kind of never knew this until reading back for this podcast. I never knew that he even considered going back into amateur wrestling.
Yeah, it was definitely, I mean, it was in the dirt sheets, but it was definitely something that was out there. And then there was always the rumors at some point, probably not in this time frame, that he wanted to do MMA too. So those rumors about Kurt were always out there.
Man, that would have been why. That would have been such a hit to them. Can you, like, if they lose Rock, Austin, and Angle in a matter of a year? I mean, for me on these, Angle has been easily a highlight, like one of the most consistent guys that they have, both as a character and in the ring. So I can't imagine, because I mean, he's like hitting his prime, you know.
You're 100% right, because in this era he's like one of their big go-to guys on a SmackDown brand, and that would have really hurt them bad. So I can't imagine it either. It would have been terrible.
Yeah. A few more things. So Velocity, a combo of the show, a new show called Velocity and another new show called Confidential, are set to premiere, and they are going to replace the other sort of syndicated style shows like Jacked and Metal. I definitely remember this pretty vividly. Like Confidential, I remember for me, so I was younger. But Confidential as a kid was one of the – it kind of blew my mind at the time, because it was basically them – the maybe the most behind the scenes they had gone on like their TV. And I remember like those episodes of Confidential just like blew my mind watching. It was like a big show for me. I don't know. I was such a big Confidential fan because it was so crazy to me to see things like the backstage and them kind of break kayfabe so blatantly and stuff, even this era. So I definitely remember Confidential well. Were you a Confidential or Velocity fan, Sean?
Velocity was, you know, kind of like a version of Superstars from the 80s. So I did watch it here and there. And it actually had some people on the show that went on to great careers, like AJ Styles, I think, had an appearance on there, Daniel Bryan, when they were in the indies. But Confidential was a really big deal because, one, it featured a return of Mean Gene Okerlund, who was doing the show. And, yeah, they were peeling back the onion on their own brand. Instead of letting the dirt sheets do it, they were doing it on their own. They had a lot of Confidential things. Right out of the gate was, I don't want to spoil anything about a future pod, but there was a big story that breaks here in the next few weeks that Confidential was all over. But you'll talk about that in an upcoming pod, so I don't want to blow that. But also, like Shawn Michaels' interview about what really happened with the screw job, a lot of behind the scenes things in Confidential that you never would have thought in a million years that WWE would cover. So it was a really cool, interesting show.
Yeah, it was for sure. Like I said, it was a big deal, I feel, at the time. I didn't even think, too, yeah, Gene coming back is big, too. So
yeah, that's a big one.
All right, our final news note is that Rey Mysterio has signed with WWE officially, and he will be he's expected to be around within the next few weeks. He's finishing off some dates that he had and kind of just working out and trying to get himself in the mode of the WWE style. And it said that he's going to return with his mask because pretty much since WCW unmasked him, he's kind of been working without the mask, but he's going to have it back as WWE believes it has some merchandise potential, which they are definitely correct. It did. So we'll be,
yeah,
absolutely, seeing Ray soon.
Yep. He's been there for a while. He left once and he's still there now. So career started back in 2002, which again is something uncanny to think about. So, yep.
All right, so that will wrap us up for the news and notes, and we will roll right into Raw for May 13th, 2002. Again, this is the go-home week for Judgment Day. We are live from Toronto, Canada, and we come out right of the gate with a match between Brock and the Hardys, like you had said earlier, Sean. So this is a lingering feud that's been around pretty much since Brock debuted on TV, essentially. So tonight it's actually going to be a handicap match where both Hardys are going to face Brock in a handicap match. So we start with kind of Brock throwing Matt around a little bit. He scrapes Matt's face on the rope, which I thought was a pretty cool spot. JR is continuing to call Heyman a hemorrhoid on life, which is a pretty funny line. We get a nice top rope splash from the Hardys, though it looked like Matt kind of missed his leg drop a little bit, like Brock pulled up a little bit. It was still a cool spot to see him do. We had the Swanton and the leg drop at the same time. So they actually go to pin Brock, and Heyman pulls the ref for the DQ. So we actually get a non-finish, which is weird for a Brock match. I thought it was short, but it made sense. I felt like the Hardys were kind of working as if they know they needed to go after his leg because they kind of did that, and they did a lot of double teaming. Like, they basically worked as if they knew that they had to work together to try and neutralize him. So I kind of like the storytelling of that. And I just think overall the Hardys and Brock work really well together. And I thought it was a good teaser of what we're going to see at Judgment Day, because it is announced that Heyman wants a rematch at Judgment Day, but it's going to be a tag match, but it will be Heyman and Brock against the Hardy Boys, which for all intents and purposes is pretty much a handicap match again, because Heyman is not really a wrestler. So I like the storytelling of it and the way it kind of set up the match at Judgment Day. So it was very short, but I still liked the way they worked in the psychology of it. So I actually went 2 stars on this one. Thoughts on this one, Sean?
Yeah. So I also went 2 stars. So I talked a little bit earlier about, I was on the pod a couple episodes ago before we were going into Backlash, and we were still on the Lesnar Hardy. So when I watched, and I've been following along, but you know, this was interesting to me because I like you said, it's almost verbatim what you said. I really liked the leg work by the Hardys. It made sense. Lesnar, had some good power slam, his belly to bellies. I feel like what was really great is the Hardys did not really seemed like they were just getting squashed in here. They seemed like they were in it. They were totally fighting against Lesnar. To your point, the hemorrhoid face of life made me laugh very hard. I thought that Jeff Hardy looked a little rough. I think he had a jaw jacker that he tried to do twice that looked a little rough. So probably some semblance of what we see from Hardy over the next few weeks of stuff that might go down. But I thought it was a pretty decent match. And the other thing I love is that they didn't trope it and have the Hardys lose a handicap match to Lesnar. I was shocked that they were going to get the pin on him before it was broken up. And it was a pleasant surprise. I gave it 2 stars, and I still continue to like this feud the same I did before Backlash. It's been really good to watch and good for them.
Let me ask you this. Do you think, because I think some of the thoughts around this match are that that Brock gave them a little bit too much and that it shouldn't have been a DQ. He should have beaten them, yada, yada. What do you think of that? Do you think Brock showed too much in this match?
I get that viewpoint, but I think the way they set it up with them going right, I think it showed a good tag team strategy of a team going after someone that they know is just a beast and going after that leg, working the leg. And you could say that, you know, Lesnar showed a lot. And he might have showed a lot more than he should have, but I think the way they approached it made sense. And for me personally, it was nice to see a handicap match not end with the single star beating the tag team, because that's usually what you see. So for me, it was a nice little twist. So, yeah, I mean, people could say they did, but I'm fine with how it was. I thought it was fine.
Yeah, I agree with you, too. I know that's kind of a feeling that some have about this. I agree, too. It's not like the Hardys are some schmuck tag team either. I mean, you know, these are former champions and all. And like you said, they had a good strat. I thought it was more to do with their strategy and that they had kind of thought this out. It's not like they were overpowering Brock or anything. They were just working smart.
Yeah, it was nice to see a tag team with a strategy going into a handicap match versus just a random handicap match booked and the single star beating the team. It was nice to see something different.
Yeah, and they even hit a twist of fate and a swanton after the bell, and that's what kind of pissed Heyman off too. So, yeah, I think the build has been pretty good for this, and I think it's kind of a logical way to go with it, the way they're doing this quote-unquote tag match with Heyman and everything. So, yep, I continue to like the way that they've presented Brock. I think his build has been good.
Yep. I agree.
All right, so we head backstage. We have the new member of the NWO, Big Show's, with X-Pac backstage. Flair comes in, and this is where we get the announcement that he officially has fired Scott Hall. So they kind of work it into the actual show saying Scott Hall's fired. Yeah. Because they pretty much phrase it as in the storyline, like Flair kind of says he can't cut it, blah, blah, blah. He's not good enough.
He was a failure is what how they covered it. He's a failure.
Yeah.
So which makes sense because he is a failure. He failed drug tests and he failed here. So it made sense.
Yeah. They were kind of, shoot comments that weren't meant to be shoot comments kind of thing. Or maybe they were. But Flair does tell us we do have a new member coming. And that the person who's going to be the new member doesn't even know, which sounds weird. So I guess we'll see what happens with this. So now they head out to the ring. Flair heads to the ring with Show. The crowd, I thought, was pretty silent. Like, not much of a reaction, considering he just made a huge heel turn. Like, I would thought he would have got more of a heel reaction, like booze, but instead it's sort of just, I thought it was just tepid. Not really a face or heel reaction, and just sort of silent.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I think it's more, people saw this one coming a mile away, right? So I think this is the end result of that. So I think you're spot on.
Yeah, it's just, I felt like when he did the turn, he had a little bit of heat, but it's not really getting, so he says that, you have to respect his name, and he really pulls in the Toronto Maple Leafs to kind of get some cheap heat, saying that he's won the title 15 times, which is or 16 times, which is 15 times better than the Maple Leafs, which gets him some crowd heat. So, Flair is kind of a master of this. I think even at this time, I think he is always somebody in wrestling who is very aware of the crowd, and I would not be shocked if he came out knowing that the crowd gave him a little bit of a tepid reaction and kind of went, okay, I need to get some cheap heat here. I got to get them fired up, so let me insult the sports team. So I thought that was a smart move to make sure he gets booed. He said he tried to work with Austin, but he wouldn't have it. He says to hell with them, Austin and the Maple Leafs. So he goes after the Maple Leafs again. He says now he understands why Vince hated Austin all these years, because he's a pain in the ass. And now Austin is going to have to deal with the Giant and the Nature Boy. And then out of nowhere, he says that he is going to face the champion Hulk Hogan tonight, which seemed very out of nowhere. So what did you think, before I get to my thoughts, what did you think whole Flair promo, Sean.
There's so much going on here. So, okay, so first off, they had to do the Flair turn. I mean, it was obvious. Flair's better as a heel. He's more comfortable in that role. But here's my fundamental problem with this whole angle, and I said it the last time I was on, is Austin has been an unlikable dick during this whole feud. And I don't blame for Flair for turning on him, because Austin has been nothing but a pain in his ass. He's come across as very unlikable. And you know what's funny is he probably did the same thing during the McMahon feud, but McMahon is such a bitter prick asshole that you forgive Austin for that. Here with Flair, it's like, it's just so obvious what a dick he is. So I don't blame Flair for turning. It makes total sense. But what doesn't make sense is, well, I guess it does in retrospect, this out of nowhere announcement that he's going for the world title. I think you brought it up earlier when you were going through the notes that ratings haven't been that great. So their thought was probably like, well, let's turn Flair heel and out of the gate, let's get a pop out of rating and have him face off with Hogan and get a nice Legends match. So, it's kind of you saw the ending to this coming, his turn coming for a long, long time. But the problem is you want Austin to be the face and Flair to be the heel. But I feel like Flair is so vindicated in being the heel, and it doesn't make me feel anything for Austin. So that's my primary problem here.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I like this a lot more than the mopey Flair that I've talked about in all the previous weeks, and how just seeing him not be Flair. So I definitely like that better. My thing about this, and I agree with what you're saying too, he is sort of justified in that Austin is just being an asshole to him for no reason, sort of. Yeah. And also, I just think so many things about this seem unnecessary. Like I almost wish this was just a feud between Austin and Flair. And even Flair has a stable. He can still have Big Show or an X-Pac and all, but just don't call it the NWO. It seems so, like, thrown together. Like, it's Flair forced. Being with the... Yeah, the head of the NWO, and then he's owner too. I'd prefer it if they were just, he still has a stable and he's the figurehead, but he's not owner. It's not the NWO. It's just him and Austin feuding. It was just a regular feud. Like, it does not have to be an authority figure versus Austin thing. And I feel like between the authority figure thing and the NWO stuff, it just kind of is a black cloud hanging over it. And it kind of brings it down and makes you, I don't know, just delegitimize a little bit. And I agree with you on the Hogan Flair match. It's just kind of like, hey, I think the Hogan title reign, the writing sort of on the wall, and they're like, well, let's squeeze this out real quick while he's still champ, you know?
Yeah, and I like your point about, you know, we've talked about this on the last pod again, that the NWO, this is just such a dead in the water premise in this time frame. And I like your point of it just be, if Flair wants to have a group of guys, go back to the end of WCW where he had his Magnificent Seven and he led that group, right? Something similar to that. The NWO name is dead, and now at this point you're forcing it to the point of where Flair, even in his interview earlier, says, well, we all know that, you know, Nash isn't suspended. He has a torn bicep, so he breaks kayfabe, and the NWO just looks like a bunch of shit. So you are spot on with your thoughts on this whole thing.
Yeah, and it's not all in two, to your point, and that Flair is not an NWO gear. He's like their leader, but he's not NWO'd out, which is a big part of the NWO. It just all seems, like you said, so thrown together. It's not cohesive enough to get over, I think. So,
agreed.
All right. Speaking of things that we'll probably not get over, we're in the back with Planet Stasiak, who speaks with, he's doing his normal Planet Stasiak promo where he talks about whatever the hell Planet Stasiak is. And then Eddie Guerrero approaches him and says, what kind of... I don't even want to do the Eddie. Let me not even try and do the Eddie accent, because it's probably just going to be offensive. But he just asks him, what kind of vegetation do they have on that planet, Holmes? Weed? Basically insinuating that Planet Stasiak has been smoking dope.
That did make me pop a little bit. That did make me laugh.
Yeah, oh, man. I'll get to him in a second when we come out for the match. But, man, Eddie is – I really love Eddie in this time frame. So he's basically asking if Planet Stasiak says, are you asking if he's in an altered state? And this whole interaction sets up our match that is coming up, which will be Sean Stasiak or Planet Stasiak versus Eddie Guerrero. Before we get into the match, any further thoughts on this Planet Stasiak smoking weed?
You brought up the point that you really like Eddie in this, and here's what I really appreciate about this. Now you're starting to see the Eddie that we're going to know and love for years to come versus when he first came back in this feud with RVD. He was more serious and more intense. And this is the first glimmer that we've seen of that other side of Eddie that we've all grown to love. So you brought, I think you were spot on with that point.
Yeah, I have it too. When he comes out for the, I think in that kind of dogging on Stasiak, and then when he comes out for the entrance, he just has this awesome swag about him. Like, he just looks so confident. And I didn't really think about it, but it's actually been a nice progression because he sort of didn't come in like that. And now that you mention it, he kind of came in sort of quiet and serious. And it's almost like now that he has the title, he's kind of building up his confidence and his swagger back. And it's nice character work. It's kind of subtle, but it's really good.
It could be for him, right? So he got fired and came back. So for him, it was probably he had to figure out what he was going to be, what his role was going to be. And he kind of handled it with kid gloves to start. And now, to your point, now that he's more comfortable, he's the champion, he knows who he is, he's in a good point in his life, now he's going to be the Eddie. But I think he handled it with kid gloves a little bit, maybe to start, because he wasn't sure. That might be why. So,
yeah, but he's looking awesome. So
yeah, fantastic.
And right behind him, RVD heads out right behind Eddie, and Eddie is immediately pissed, which kind of lets Stasiak get kind of an early advantage because Eddie is sort of distracted by RVD being ringside. And then as we work further to the match, it, as you would expect, with Stasiak, it's sort of morphed to a squash as Eddie just kind of takes it to him. He does that awesome spot Eddie always does against bigger guys where he drop kicks the ankle, which is always a cool spot that I love. And he just gets the frog splash, so he wins. So it sort of ends up being a squash. So I went 1 star, which is kind of my, unless the squash is like, you know, super boring and long, as long as it's somebody good in there, I usually standard, I go 1 star. And then so after this, RVD, so Eddie's heading back up the ramp, and RVD kind of immediately attacks him, and Eddie is pissed. And he gets in the ring, and he tells him, you better get his ass back here. Who do you think you are? RVD does the point, which I thought was fine. The whole point of this was kind of just to remind us of the IC match. Thoughts on pretty much just a squash to further this angle. Yeah,
you are a kind gentleman with the 1 star, my friend. Yeah, so this whole thing, I felt like this was just a segment on a show to get RVD and Guerrero in people's view headed into the pay-per-view. And it didn't really make a lot of sense. RVD comes out. He doesn't really interfere in the match at all, which is weird. He's just there. And then all he does to end the segment, to your point, is point at himself. I feel like this is a waste of a segment for RVD and Eddie. They could have probably come up with something a little different. The Stasiak thing is not working. He's so bad. I even said on the last pod, I hate him so much. And I just felt this was stupid and a waste of RVD and Eddie and what they should have been doing to build the pay-per-view. I'm going to give it a 1/4 star. And that's a gift. So 1 star, I thought, you're a very kind person, Jake.
Yeah, that's just kind of like, especially like we've done in the NXT pod, and you get so many squashes on there, that's just kind of become, unless there's something in the match that pisses me off or it's real long and boring, I usually just like, it's a nice even one. But it was weird. The thing that was weird to me is that RVD almost comes off kind of heelish, or at least what he does is sort of heelish here, which I thought was a weird way to,
to build it. It was, you know, just strange. He comes out, he doesn't really do anything. It's just strange. Like I said, I think it was just for FaceTime to build to their pay-per-view match, but it was odd.
I agree with you. I think there's probably better ways you could have done it. It's sort of like, I feel like in this time frame, they like doing these things where the face kind of gets under the heel skin and pisses them off, because they do this sort of angle a lot on SmackDown, and I felt like that's what they were doing here. But just the execution was odd to me. It made RVD kind of look like a, like kind of underhanded, which was odd. But I think Stasiak, one thing watching these is that I think if you are going to basically commit him as a jobber, I guess he does have a purpose as a jobber. He almost reminds me of like a they put him in the role of like a Barry Horowitz, where he's like a jobber, but he does have some kind of character. You know, I feel like that's how they're using him, which I guess if that's what they're going to do, I mean, that's fine. But if they're expecting this to get over and him to be anything but that, I don't think the gimmick is going to get him anywhere. But yeah, it's okay if he's just going to be a goofy jobber guy. You just want him to be silly and at least have some kind of character, but still get squashed. I mean, whatever.
You know, he gets squashed by something that isn't relevant to a main title feud you have going into the pay-per-view. Stasiak doesn't need to be involved in this in any way. So that's kind of how I felt about it. So,
gotcha. All right, so we head backstage, and Coach is backstage trying to get a word with Austin. He talks to Deborah, and Deborah says that she's going to get him. So we come back after the break. Then Coach is with Stone Cold. He says Flair, Austin says that Flair's running his mouth like a jackass. He pretty much just addresses everything that Flair said earlier and kind of runs him down. At one point, he said something about being a blue-haired son of a bitch, where I didn't understand what he was talking about. I don't know if he meant blonde, and he accidentally said blue, but it sounded funny.
Maybe. I think what he's trying to do is maybe insinuate his age, because one of the slang terms for older people is blue hairs. So that might have been what he was trying to go for. I don't know. Maybe he meant to say blonde. I don't know.
Could be. That could be an awesome thing. It kind of threw me off. So he asks Coach if Flair deserves a title shot, and then he just answers himself by saying no. And says Flair's going to find out that you don't screw with Stone Cold. It was okay. This was just a basic Austin response promo to what Flair said earlier, but really nothing of note. He just pretty much says everything Flair says is crap, and he doesn't deserve a title shot. So it was,
And it's good so weird. They just throw Deborah in so randomly at times. Like the last pod I was on, they just showed her into a random backstage segment with Undertaker, and they do the same thing here. So it's like, we just have to have a token Deborah appearance, and she didn't really add anything to it. So that was bizarre, too.
Yeah, like the beginning where it's like, I'll go get him for you. Then we go to commercial and he's there. It's like, what's the point? Just have him be there.
It's so strange.
Yeah, but to me, the delivery was fine, but it just, there wasn't a ton of substance to it. It was just kind of standard stuff.
Yeah, I definitely think there's signs here of where the Austin thing is just really dwindling down. The last 5 years, magic is slowly starting to crumble. And like these interviews, and to your point saying, it just seems standard. Think about saying that about Austin back in 97, 98 now. So those signs, it's really starting to come apart. So.
Yeah. Agree. So then we cut to a very strange vignette called The Day in the Life of Tommy Dreamer. Which at first it kind of looks like he's just doing normal everyday activities, but we quickly realize all these normal activities, he's doing something weird. He's brushing his teeth, but then he starts sharing the toothbrush with the dog. He's shaving, but then he starts shaving his tongue. He drinks toilet water in the urinal and says the reason is because the water's colder. I don't have any thoughts on this, Sean, because I don't know what to say about this really, except it was weird.
The only thought I had is I don't remember any of this. And the other thought I had is how not over this gimmick would be in current society with COVID and drinking out of toilets and all this. I mean, it's so bizarre. No weird. I got nothing else to say. I don't remember any of this whatsoever on the first watch of this all those years ago. So this totally what took me aback, especially the toilet.
Yeah, I don't remember this one. I don't think it was on this one, but the one that the vague memories I have of this is there's one where he drinks the Barbicide. Like, oof. That's some kind of thing that comes along is him drinking Barbicide. I just don't get how this is supposed to do. I don't know what it's going to do as far as, like, being on a wrestling show. Like, I don't know where this is supposed to take him.
No idea.
It's just weird. I feel like it's just weird thing that they're trying for some reason that somebody thought of. It's very odd. All right, so we have Terry is going to face Molly, and this is based on the bikini contest from last week that, of course, Terry won, but then Molly beat her with the flipper afterwards. And as a nice little treat, we also get William Regal on commentary for this match. It's weird because they can't decide if Terry's an interviewer or a wrestler, because for the last like month she's been an interviewer, and now all of a sudden she's in this thing with Molly. I don't know if it's just because I guess they think she's like not really a wrestler, so it's easy for her to get sympathy or something. Her ring gear is basically just like underwear, like panties for the most part. Regal calls her a sprightly young filly. JR says that Molly had, at one point, JR says that Molly is spunky. No, he says Terry has spunk, and King says that, yeah, he has some spunk too, which was a King line. So, this match, it was kind of just a quick match to put over Molly, as she pretty much we actually did get a Hurricane Rana from Terry, which was kind of shocking to me.
Yeah, I had that in my notes too. I was like, holy shit, she pulled out a Hurricane Rana. Yeah, so I mean, go ahead. I don't know if you're finished. Go ahead.
No, you're good. So it's kind of just a quick match to put Molly over. She wins with a cradle. I thought she probably took a little bit too much offense from Terry, because Terry is pretty much not a wrestler at this point. She's an interviewer and never really was too much of a wrestler. Like, I don't know if I like Molly having to win with a cradle. I thought she should have been a little bit more dominant. So I went half a star on this one. What'd you think, Sean? And then we'll get into some commentary lines that I think were entertaining.
Yeah, I also went in the half a star, and you know what I really like? I mean, yeah, you already talked about the match, but what I do like, and which makes sense, I mean, it makes sense that Terry and Molly are wrestling or whatever, because Terry's supposed to be that sex pot non-virgin, which, you know, Lawler clearly wants everybody to know 1,000 times, right? And then, you know, you have Molly, who's the prude. What I really like is the Lord Regal component, because at first I was wondering, why the hell is Lord Regal out here to announce this match? And he shits on D'Lo for like a few seconds, but then he watches the match. And the D'Lo thing is out of nowhere for me. I'm like, God, I don't remember D'Lo in 2002 for the European title. Nope. But I really enjoy the fact that here's Molly, who's a virgin. You have the heel Regal, who's supposed to be a gentleman. And then at the end, he gets with her and walks her to the back. The pairing makes sense. And as I watched it, I was like, holy shit, this makes total sense. Virginal Molly with the Regal. So that part I did like. I also gave it half a star. So,
yeah, those guys, I didn't mention that. Yeah, so after the match, he's impressed. He says she's classy and says he wants to escort her up the ramp. So I agree with you. I think that's a pretty good pairing. The only other note I have for this is when Terry did do the Rana, JR, and you could tell this is one of JR's, like, dry, like, he knows what he's doing, but he said, she wrapped her legs, squeezed her thighs, and there she came with the Hurricane Rana. And King basically, like, wets himself when JR says that about squeezing her thighs. Yeah. Squeezing her thighs, and there she came with the Hurricane Rana.
Yep. Good. Yeah, he totally. And Lawler also made a comment about he has a little spunk in himself. I don't know if you caught that one too.
So she's got some spunk, and he goes, "Oh yeah, I got some spunk too." So
he's got it. He's just a gross man.
Good old pervy Lawler. All right, so up next, I was kind of surprised. I thought this might be our main event, but we'll talk about later. I think we're at a point where they're trying to put Austin in every TV main event, because if not for that, I would think this would be the main event, because we already have Flair versus Hogan. And it's also apparently no DQ they threw in at the last minute. So it does feel kind of weird and random that this is a title match at this point. It just seems very thrown out there. Hogan comes out on the motorcycle. It was kind of a lot of back and forth. It was sort of a standard Hogan match in that Flair. It was kind of lots of back and forth. He hulks up, and then he goes for a leg drop, but then X-Pac does a run in. He gets beat up, and so X-Pac and Show come out. Then Bradshaw comes in and kind of runs them all off, and they fade out. Austin runs in. He hits the stunner on Flair, and then Hogan gets another leg drop and then is able to win it. I really liked the energy of the match. I didn't think either guy was, like, really phoning it in. The whole thing kind of felt a little bit contrived that this was even a match in the first place. Like you said, it's just kind of something they put out there for ratings. But as a match, I thought it was okay. I went 2.25 on it because I liked the energy, and it was kind of just them doing kind of a quick sort of 10-minute formula match with the run-ins thrown in there. And, yeah, so I thought it was fine enough, even if the match really didn't serve too much of a purpose, except for Stone Cold to piss off Flair more.
Yeah, I gave it 2 stars. You know, it's your typical Flair-Hogan match that we've seen for many, 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 many years. A little difference. There's a few flubs here. You know, first off, Hogan's figure four is an all-time bad figure four. Flair misses the over-the-top rope flip, which I found kind of sad, right?
Yeah, he always nailed that. Flip.
Yeah, he misses the Flair flip. And then Hogan, you know, when he goes for a first pin, repositions Flair after the leg drop because he was out of position, so X-Pac could run in and interfere. So, And then X-Pac sells for Hogan like crazy. It reminded me of when Michaels used to sell for Hogan in that SummerSlam match. But I also liked Bradshaw. You brought it up many times. I love the Bradshaw stuff right now. It's so great. I love that he came out. And then obviously Austin run out makes sense to set up for their match. So 2 stars. Crowd was definitely hot for this. Regardless of how you felt about Hogan's reign, the crowd was super, super hot for this whole thing. So 2 stars for me.
Yeah. I thought Flair looked like he was in really good shape, too. He kind of had some abs rocking, I thought.
He really did. And everything you read about this time frame is he had no confidence. He didn't feel good about his body. And I thought he looked like Flair, which was also a really good point.
Yeah, I thought he almost looked better than some sort of 90s Flair. So at least his, maybe not his wrestling as much, but just his body. Like, he looked like he'd been working out. Like, he looked in pretty good shape. So, yeah, that's just the thing about this one. It's like you said, there's some, you know, not everything was super crisp, but I didn't feel like they were going in and, you know, just dogging it and working super slow. Like, I think I've been saying about Hogan, he doesn't seem to be mailing in this run. And, you know, Flair is not somebody I don't think that ever really mails it in because it's just not his forte, you know. So, yeah, it was good for what it was.
Yeah, and he wasn't mailing it in. It's good to see Hogan. Like, I wish this is the Hogan I had saw in WCW, NWO, because he is not mailing this in at all. So, and it's kind of inspiring to see at this point in his career to be that way. And unfortunately, you know, it doesn't have a long railroad because he can only keep it up for so long, obviously. So,
yeah, to me, it kind of just shows where he's at. Like, he's not, you know, we're a few years, a good ways away from his kind of his last big run in WCW. He's over with the crowd, but he probably even knows it's mostly nostalgia. So I feel like he knows he's got to work a little bit harder. He's not going to get by totally on, you know, I just feel like it's his place in wrestling. He's fallen a little bit as far as his, you know, this is post Austin, post Rock. So he's not the undisputed, you know, biggest wrestler ever anymore. So he's got to, I feel like he knows he can't just come in and, you know, do eye rakes and shit and get by on that anymore. So, so we get a Get the F Out promo, and which I thought was like two people banging in a limo, and I couldn't hear it too well, but I'm pretty sure that was the Mark Henry Sexual Chocolate music they were playing. I don't know. Did you hear that?
Definitely I heard it. You know, this is a great promo, and, you know, just for the Sexual Chocolate music alone, this commercial gets 4 stars for me. So it's great.
Get the F Out.
So very risque. Very risque commercial.
Always. So we head backstage. Flair berates X-Pac and Big Show for getting run off by Bradshaw, which I thought he had a pretty good point, actually, because, I mean, if you're Big Show, I mean, maybe if he runs off X-Pac, but if you're Big Show, how are you going to let Bradshaw run you off? Like, you're a giant, pretty much. You're going to get run off. I mean, I don't blame Flair for being kind of pissed off. But so he puts Bradshaw in a handicap match against both of them, and then he also says that Austin is going to be in a lumberjack match against the newest member of the NWO, which will be revealed later. I kind of, like I said, it's kind of refreshing to see him kind of go and start being crazy again after being mopey quiet Flair for so many weeks. It's at least entertaining, even though it's not the best, you know, situation. It's just at least a lot better than what we were getting. And this is just, the only thing problem I have with this is something I feel like they're starting to lean on both shows. And I think it's just them always going back to the authority figure thing. Yep. It's just, it always, the way of getting heat on the heels is some authority figure. It's always like matchmaking. Like, well, I'm going to put you in this match against this person. I think it can get a little bit stale where it's always, well, authority figure stacking the odds, authority figure stacking the odds, which we've seen with like Austin for years and years. It just feels like we need to find, there's other ways for the heels to get heat and ways to do an angle than it always being authority figure, stacks the deck, that sort of thing. So that kind of was a little stale for me.
Yeah, and I agree. I booking another handicap match, like tag team matches seem to be the big thing to get feuds over now, which we see throughout the Ruthless Aggression era. But yeah, we talked about it with Eddie earlier and showing his personality, and it's good to see Flair show who he is now. So they both seem to happen quick overnight, which is great, and it's kind of a sigh of relief because it's good seeing them both back in this mode. Whether you agree or disagree with how they're being used or the feuds they're in, it's good to see them be themselves. So that in itself is a win for me.
Yep. Okay, so we get next up, we get a tag match. Trish and Bubba are going to face Stevie and Jazz with both titles on the line. So we have the women's title and the hardcore title on the line. This is stems from last week with the whole fiasco that I hated, where Bubba powerbombs Trish to the table, and then somehow she's ending up on a team with him after because he's an idiot and lost his title to Jazz. So I just hate that Trish has to be saddled with this dude that put her through a table. I just think it's stupid. So we do this. He does the spike throwing spot, except he does it with Trish, like the way he would throw spike at them at the beginning. They kind of just start going through your typical sort of hardcore stuff. In a kind of funny spot, Trish is trying to get the trash can in the ring, and she just cannot get it. She throws like two or three times. It just keeps hitting the top rope and bouncing back at her.
I felt bad for her. Yeah. Yes. It was hard. That was hard to watch. It was a little hard to watch.
Stevie gets hit in the nuts with a hockey stick at one point. In the middle of the match, the hardcore crew, like Crash, Justin Incredible, all these people who this is all they do at this point is run in for the hardcore title. They all come in and try and battle for the title before Justin Incredible just eats the guitar, and then they kind of just go on with the match. Bubba chases Stevie away, and then Trish and Jazz are kind of left in the ring, and Trish hits the Stratisfaction for the win, and therefore she wins the women's title. Before I get into mine, I'll let you speak first, Sean. So what was your opinion of this whole deal?
So I don't like the women's match and the hardcore title being intermeshed, but again, I got to remember the time frame I'm in. I thought it was actually a fun match up until all the outside interference crap. The Trish stuff, yeah, I felt bad, but it was funny. I liked the spot with Bubba throwing Trish out over the top. I thought the hockey stick to the stop sign was pretty funny. And then all of a sudden, all the hardcore guys come out, and then the match kind of loses luster for me. But I was enjoying it up to that point. It was so short-lived. But I give it about 1.5 stars for the moments I did enjoy. But, you know, clearly it ended up in a whole schmoz at the end. And then, you know, Bubba Ray, you know, clearly has it in for women because he does some stuff to Jazz here, I believe. And then obviously he beat up Trish last week. So that beating up women gimmick that he's had since 99 when he got there, he continues to do. So,
yeah, I'm a little lower on it because for the reasons you said, but I guess it just affected it more. It just felt very disjointed with everybody running in and that sort of thing. So he does, like you said, Bubba puts Jazz through the table after the fact. And I just thought it was – there's actually I'm not sure if you're aware of it, but I was kind of – it made me feel a little bit better about the match once I read it. But apparently Jazz on the Insurrection Tour tore her ACL or tore her knee. So they kind of had to get the title off her, apparently. That was the reasoning, behind this whole mess was that they had to get it off her. But either way, I mean, if you're in the crowd or you're watching this, you don't really know that. And I just thought it was a lame way for Trish to win the title because they've had a pretty good feud going. So for this to be the way that the title switches, I mean, I guess I get why they had to do it because I guess Jazz couldn't really do a full singles match sort of thing. So they had to kind of hide it in here. But it just kind of sucked because I didn't think Trish got much of a pop either for winning the title because I don't even know if the crowd really truly understood that the stipulation that she could win the title. So it just, I guess I give them the benefit of the doubt with Jazz's injury situation, but it was just kind of it was a sucky way for the title change hands because they've had a pretty solid feud up until this point. And kudos to Jazz because if she tore ACL, I mean, she took a Stratisfaction and she goes to the table with a torn ACL. Apparently, like, that's why she had the big knee brace and that stuff on. So I guess that's the reasoning behind it.
Yep.
Yeah, kind of a bummer though that's the way it had to go because they have a good feud. So,
well, and she's a good representation for them because she is a very good wrestler and she's tough. So,
yep. Yeah, sucky situation. But anyway, we go backstage and a pissed off Taker is approached by Coach. I didn't love Taker's whole appearance right here. He's sort of leaning on the wall. He reminded me of like an 11-year-old kid who's like pouting on the wall. Like pissed off at their dad or something. Yeah, like he was like doing that thing where he's like hitting his head against the wall and then he refuses to talk and he just walks away. because he's pissed off about his motorcycle. I get what they were going for, but the look was not good. Like, I get they wanted him to be silent to show he was pissed off, but he just looked like a pouty kid, which wasn't
for
a good
Taker,
look.
This is not the promo you want for Taker. That's not Taker. So, to your point.
Yeah. And King also tells us that the motorcycle was $40,000. So.
Well, I guess I'd be pissed off, too, if it was a $40,000 bike. I'd be kicking somebody's butt, not putting my head through a wall.
not tapping my head on the wall like I just got grounded. we get some hype for the Judgment Day card. We get the so every time they do this hype, they show the bald edge and bald angle, which is funny because angle doesn't even register because I'm just used to it. But the bald edge I thought looked like a skinnier Baron Corbin.
Oh, with the bald head. That's awful. Thank God that didn't happen.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, when they're running down the card, it's not the worst built show. I mean, they have most of the feuds have got some time. I mean, so.
It's a very right, well-built so next show. Up, and that's one of the things we talked about is that the feuds, at least they're building the feuds and letting them simmer over a course of time, which is why we have pretty good, decent pay-per-view coming up in terms of the matches. So.
Yeah. All right, we find out that Goldust and Booker T are going to be Lumberjacks in the Austin match later on. And so Booker T is dressed like a lumberjack, and he says he feels like a fool. Goldust tells him that he looks ravishing, and Booker T tells him that he needs to wear it. So we just continue. Just another quick, really funny segment to build the relationship between Booker T and Goldust.
Booker T dressed as Paul Bunyan. That was pretty funny. So that was good.
I look like a fool. Yeah. All right. So this is going to be this is our semi-main event. So we have X-Pac and Big Show in the handicap match against Bradshaw. Bradshaw starts off by going after Show, power slamming X-Pac. Eventually, Show sneaks in a chair shot. We get two choke slams and then X-Pac tags in for the chicken shit pin. What were your thoughts on this one, Sean? That was just sort of the notable spots of this one.
Well, I think you only had to put notable spots here. So we still have the issue for me that Bradshaw's still wearing his APA gear. We talked about this last time is, you know, give him his own gimmick. He doesn't need to be still with the APA and the APA music. I think that's really stupid. Lots of punching, chopping, kicking. Bradshaw, I love. He's stiff as always. And I thought he looked good holding his own. The problem I have, the last time I was on again, right before Backlash, he ate the pinfall, right? He lost at Backlash. And here we are again where he's also getting pinned. So I feel like they're slowly starting to have a missed opportunity with Bradshaw. Yes, he's getting some good shine in the matches. Yes, he's getting, you know, paired up with Austin. But when it comes to winning matches, it's not consistent and it's not there. And I feel like they're starting to flub it a little bit, which is unfortunate because this push on Bradshaw was one of my favorite things going on right now. So those are my thoughts.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was solid. I thought the idea of the match made sense, like the way they worked it, because it was all about Bradshaw, like showing his grit and determination. There were some good spots where sort of like he was able to handle them both at one time, or like he's holding X-Pac and he kicks Show on the apron, stuff like that. And I was kind of torn because if he loses, I guess it gives him more reason to be pissed. And I guess it does build him a little bit of sympathy because he was put in an unfair situation. But like you said, it's all about where they go with it because he needs to get a win or else he's just a guy that keeps getting beat up and losing and getting screwed over. And eventually he's got to win, which you could have him win. There's ways they could have worked it where he wins this, you know, have him pin X-Pac. Like he kicks Joe off the apron and then power slams X-Pac and pins him, you know. There's ways you could go about it. So I'm going to withhold judgment, but to me it's all about where they go with it. But I can't say I'm optimistic that they're going to – because like you said, they need to do something with him. He can't just keep getting – whether he's getting screwed over or not, he can't keep losing. You know?
Yeah, and I think like they booked themselves into a corner a little bit because you can't have Show lose. He just turned. He's going into a major pay-per-view match on Sunday with Flair. So you're kind of booked in a situation now. It's what the hell do you do? So, and I gave this 1.25. I didn't think it was great, but I got a star in one quarter on this one.
Yeah, I want a star and a half. Like I said, I did like the general idea. I thought they worked whatever story they could out of this. But yeah, I get what you're saying too about Show and even X-Pac too, especially because the NWO are in shambles. They just lost, they just fired Scott Hall. Show's brand new and they're trying to build him up. I mean, you know, they only have two guys. It's like you don't want them to lose either because they kind of already don't look that legit. So then if they just start jobbing, then they look, they need to elevate everybody, and it's hard to do that.
Yeah, this situation, it's really, really tough.
Yeah. All right, so we get Hogan. He's interviewed by Coach on his way out, and he said he was on his way out on his motorcycle, but he decided that since Austin watched his back earlier, he's going to stay and watch Austin's back. And so, of course, he gets attacked by Taker from behind. And so in kind of a famous spot, I feel like this is a pretty well-known little thing, he ties up Hogan. He hits him with the tire iron, and Taker ties Hogan behind his motorcycle and starts pulling him around the arena. So this, Sean, is another way I would say this is a different, shows that this is a Hogan who's willing to do a lot more. Because I feel like you said, like WCW Hogan would have been like, I'm not getting pulled behind a fucking motorcycle. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he
like,
said, that doesn't work for me, brother. That's what yeah, got exactly. there. But I love this. Listen, it was obvious that Hogan was wearing protective gear, right? So because he was gilled to the knot. You know, you could tell there was gear under there. But I thought this was great. And the angles going back and forth between the hallway and Hogan swerving everywhere. I love this. And I probably shouldn't have, but I really did like this.
I like the idea of it. My problem is though they were trying to sell it as being like, compared to what they did a few weeks ago, where Taker's beating them with the belt buckle, I thought was a lot better because that actually looked brutal and they sold it as brutal and made sense. Where this, I feel like they were trying to sell it. Like JR was like, he's on the concrete and he's clearly on carpet. Like, you know what I mean? He's like, well, he's on the concrete.
And then he swings into a bunch of boxes that are empty they randomly set up. And then the other thing I really thought was funny is they're trying to give him oxygen while they put on a neck brace. And I'm like, why are they doing it? If he's got a neck problem, does he have an oxygen mask?
Yeah, it was a little bit too much. Like, he kind of, you know, I feel like this is what, like, kids in my neighborhood did when I was a kid. Like, pull each other behind a four-wheeler or something, you know?
Yeah, and like, I like what they were trying to go for. I did like it because I thought it was different.
I just feel like they needed more to, like, if you're going to do a stretcher thing, he's got to hit more than, like, some cardboard boxes and a couple pipes fall. I'm like, maybe have like Taker beat him and like knock him out with the tire iron and then drag him around when he's knocked out or something. Like have him do the brutality with the tire iron and then just drag him as sort of an insult. It was just, that part was the only thing. Like you said, I like the idea of it. It's a cool visual. It's just, I don't think it came off as brutal as they would have liked it to come off. Is only
To your point, it should have been more vicious. I do agree with you there. It should have been more brutal and vicious.
Yeah. So we head out for our main event, which we find out Austin comes out. And before he can even get to the ring, he's already jumped by a bunch of lumberjacks because pretty much all of our lumberjacks are heels that are jumping Austin. And then Flair reveals that our newest member of the NWO is going to be Booker T. In a very random, it just felt so random. It kind of just felt like they picked somebody, and I don't know. I felt like it did not get a great reaction from the crowd because they didn't, there's no build to it really. They didn't feel like there were a lot of stakes, and you already have NWO, which seems kind of like they're just throwing random people together at this point, and this just felt like another random person. So from the get go, I felt like it already kind of landed a little bit like a fart in church. It's nothing against Booker T, you know?
Well, we're also invested in his angle with Goldust, so this seemed like out of the blue. Like, we're all invested in what's happening with him and Goldust, and all of a sudden he's in the NWO. It's like, what the hell just happened, right? So you're spot on. Yeah. It came out of nowhere.
Yeah, it just reeked of, like, we had to come up with somebody. Sorry, like, we had to get somebody, and Booker T is somebody with name value. It didn't seem very thoughtful. So, so the match, we kind of get... So it's basically just the whole match is they work a little bit. Austin gets thrown out. He gets pummeled by different guys outside. I did make a note that him getting beat up by Brock seemed to be kind of like noteworthy. Like,
yeah, I put that too.
Brock throws him into the post, which I thought kind of caught my eye. Like, oh, look, a Brock. It's the first like ever interaction, or I don't even know how many actions they end up having off the top of my head.
That was the note I put. It was rare Austin Brock segment. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. And then so we kind of get towards the end, and Austin's hitting everybody comes up on the apron. He's running around hitting all of them. And then he ends up winning with a roll up. The concept is okay, I guess. It was just like your typical, like, Austin overcoming the odds. Maybe you could argue in this case, he should not have been able to overcome the odds, because, I mean, there's just like 9 guys on the apron. He's just knocking them all off, and then he ends up winning. It's, I guess, as a match, it was okay, I guess. I went 2 stars. I may be overrating it the more I think about it. But he always has good fire and everything. It's hard to go too low in an Austin match when he's just kind of full of energy like this. But, yeah, I didn't think this came off very well, this whole thing, with Booker T as the guy. And, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
What did you think, Sean?
I went 1.5. A couple of other things. I thought, you know, in the post-match beat, I loved Arn Anderson coming out, right? So we got a rare Arn Anderson attack, which, you know, everybody loves Arn Anderson. I thought Show looked pretty stiff attacking Austin after the match, so I thought that looked good. I thought it was a really good post-match beatdown. The match overall, I gave it 1.5. To your point, it wasn't a great match. I thought the post-show beatdown was needed and needed the NWO to look good in a kind of a just beating down Austin to go into the pay-per-view. And I thought Show looked really, really good here. Now, Show's way overweight, but I thought Big Show looked really, really good here, which they absolutely needed to have happen. So that's my thoughts.
Yeah. I actually think that's one of the things they've done well with the NWO thing is bringing Show. I think they've done a pretty decent job in the last couple of weeks of making, kind of building him back up into a threat. So yeah, I agree with you on the post-match beatdown. I thought it, you know, for what they're going for, it's just, I guess the whole thing just felt kind of, it didn't feel like inspired to me. It kind of felt like standard. Like, you know, Austin, he comes in, he kind of wins the match and overcomes odds, but then he gets beat down at the end. So he has something to be pissed off about next week, which is okay. It just, I don't know, it just didn't have the heat to it that you want from something with Austin, you know. You're just kind of expecting it to be more. It just feels very thrown together and not, I don't know, it just seems uninspired to me, if that makes sense.
Totally makes sense.
But that will wrap up Raw. So overall feelings, Sean, what did you think of this episode of Raw?
I think it was a pretty paint-by-numbers go-home show for the most part. I'll be honest with you, probably my favorite thing on this whole show was the Hardys and Lesnar. I think the rest of it was more angle and more just kind of treading water. I did like the Hogan Flair match to a certain extent. I think that was a nice little throwback moment. I did like the backstage segment with Hogan, even though it could have been more brutal. I gave this show 4.5 out of 10. Pretty standard, if you ask me.
Yeah, same thing. Like, I went 5 out of 10, and I feel like I've almost been giving Raw a 5 out of 10 almost every episode, and I'm kind of like, well, am I just not thinking this through enough? But I just feel like that's where they are right now. Sometimes it's like a tick better, and sometimes a tick worse, but that's just kind of where they're at. They almost have so much talent that they can only be, it's hard for them to really be like bad, you know, like really bad, but they're also not really, I don't think I've seen a great episode of Raw since I started doing the podcast. So it's like, I feel like 5 out of 10 is where they're at right now. It's just nothing is like what I would call horrible, but nothing is, you know, terrible. You have some stuff that seems built well. Some of it seems thrown together. It's nothing's like nothing you would consider like, oh, super hot angles that you have to watch, you know. And so I think that's just where they are. I think they're right down the middle right now. But it did build well to the pay-per-view, I have to say. At least reminded us what we're expecting to see, you know.
Yep, paint by numbers, but it's not bad. It's not great. It's just the standard go home. Let's tread the water till we get to where we want to go. So,
yeah. And I think their main goal in this was to try and, since they only basically had this episode since Flair turned, they really need to commit a lot to getting Flair over as a heel against Austin.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. So we roll on to SmackDown, May 19th, 2002. And now we're in Montreal. To start us off, we get a very long recap of pretty much all the main angles from SmackDown the previous week with Vince and Triple H and their conflict. Triple H makes his entrance as commentary. They have a good 4 to 5 minutes as his entrance is super long, and they kind of just spend it putting over the brutality of Hell in the Cell. And I really like that they mentioned, and this would come up Triple H would say it himself again later in the show, but I'm mentioning how Triple H retired Foley in the Cell. Well, I thought it was a nice touch to bring up the history, like Triple H's history in the Cell. I thought that was pretty good. I always like when they try and put over the Cell and like the significance of it, I guess, before it became like a every 6 months kind of sort of thing, you know.
I agree with you. You know, it was interesting to me that he brought up Foley too, because it was kind of almost heelish a little bit, which, you know, anyway, I'll let you keep talking because I really enjoy this opening segment. So go ahead.
Yeah, but I get what you mean. It's kind of like how they're playing him. Like he's a face, but he's kind of ruthless,
tweener.
I guess.
Yeah, he's a tweener.
Yes, a tweener. Yeah, tweener. So he comes to the ring. He says he's not just going to go away and give up. He says, I am here forever. So he's going to send Jericho straight to hell at Judgment Day. He calls Jericho out, but Edge comes out and comes and gets face to face with Triple H and says he's pissed that he got hit with the sledgehammer. As Triple H, to remind you, he came out last week at the end at the final match and hit everybody, whether they're heel or face. He hit everybody with the hammer. Edge says he doesn't want to play the game. Triple H says he's not a good guy, and basically says if he's got a problem with him, fight him. So Edge hits him. Angle and Jericho, which I really love that Angle and Jericho come out right here when they see that Edge and Triple H are fighting. They immediately capitalize and beat both of them down. And in the end of it, Angle comes away with some of Edge's hair, which I thought was a really nice touch given their stipulation. Yeah, I thought this was a really interesting interaction that made sense because I think Edge is rightfully pissed. And I like that we got to see a little bit of sort of the angrier side of Edge, even though he wasn't angry at the person he's feuding with. It was still nice to see him not just play like, oh, Mr. Cool Guy, that he actually to show, you know, some fire to him. And also like the heels coming in and taking advantage when they realize the two faces are pissed off at each other. So I thought it was a good way to integrate both feuds and, you know, build them. So yeah, I really like this opening segment.
This might be my favorite segment that we've had since you started this pod. So there's so many moving parts here. I love that Edge is pissed off at Triple H for what happened in their prior, I guess it was last week's episode. I love that Edge is getting that good rub that Bradshaw didn't. Edge is getting wins. He's getting great FaceTime with three of the main guys, or the three main guys on this show. And I love that it sets up a possible Edge-Triple H match down the line, which is great because we're selling these two feuds that are going at the pay-per-view, and they literally do it in 5 minutes. But they also set up, and what I like about this is they're not just looking forward to the pay-per-view. They're also looking ahead to a possible Edge Triple H match. So I thought that was a nice little twist. I thought this was an awesome opening segment. Sells both matches going into the pay-per-view and also gives us a little peek under the tent of what we might see in the future. So I really, really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I agree that I like that the two faces aren't just going to get along no matter what. Like Edge, it's like, no, you're not going to. I thought it made Edge look good that he didn't just like forget that he got hit with a sledgehammer. Whether Triple H is supposed to be a face or not, he's like, look, you're not going to hit me in the face and get away with it.
And the way you said it, Triple H says he's not a good guy, but it's the way he said it. He said it with that Triple H heel intensity. He goes, you know, and that's what really sold that for me. It made me remind me that. Oh, you know what? He is a face, but yeah, he really is a son of a bitch. So I just thought there's so many good nuances in this promo and the heels coming out. So really good stuff.
Yeah, it was it was a good example of them doing kind of a long opening promo that worked. It didn't come off as long-winded or kind of dry or killing time. It felt like a good kind of hot opening angle. So yeah, good. All right, so we'll see how the rest of the show goes, though. So we have Stacy's in the back preparing for a swimsuit contest. That's apparently tonight. And Vince wants to get a preview. But before he can get a preview of what Stacy has in the robe, Jericho and Angle interrupt him and basically talk about what just happened. I think Angle has the hair in his hand still. And Vince says, well, to satisfy them, they will face Edge and Triple H tonight in a tag team match, and Vince says that he wants to get a nuzzle, presumably of Stacy's boobs.
I know you brought up Vince and how you know, we're just, it just seems like there's a lot of him and you're kind of over that, but I love horny Vince, old man Vince, and him about to go in for the nipple sucking and Angle Jericho breaking it up was very, very funny. And again, it sets up nicely. It's just a good flow from the opening into this segment, and it's just kind of steering along, and it's a really smooth, easy, make sense kind of scenario. And those are the kind of things that I really like. I like simplicity.
Yep. All right, so we head back to the ring after we set that up, and we have Lance Storm and Hardcore Holly are going to face Randy Orton, the young Randy Orton, and Val Venus. This kind of goes back to last week where kind of Holly and Lance Storm now are both on Orton, where they kind of screwed him over last week where Holly was the referee, and Val just, I guess, is a random guy that decided to help Orton. This match was a very basic tag back and forth for the first, like, whatever little bit of time it was until Orton rolls up Storm. It was basically more to build up the Orton versus Lance Storm and Holly angle than anything else, because I felt like maybe the match, there was maybe like 2 minutes of the match before the roll-up, but just like Orton stealing the win. So I went half a star on this one. It almost wasn't even that much of a match, honestly.
No, I went 1 star, actually. And it's, here's another one. This, from the last pod I was on, this is one that started on the SmackDown that I watched with you. So here we are. It is still going. And, you know, I just think it was a quick match. It wasn't much to it. But I also think it keeps Orton going. So I gave it 1 star. It was inoffensive and, you know, got the point across. And it gave Orton a win he needed. So I'm good with it.
Yeah, I really like the Orton angle. It's a simple but effective angle for, you know, where he is as a character. He's like this young...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And utilizing veterans to help him, which I think is also very smart.
Yeah, exactly. Like guy and somebody like Holly who can easily get some heel heat because he seems like he just legit probably is an asshole. So.
Yep.
All right. So we get a recap of Taker dragging Hogan. And then in the back, we see Maven shooting this shot, telling Tori good luck before the bikini contest. Ask her if she wants to go to dinner. And Tori actually accepts. But then Reverend Devon shows up and chastises him for his impure thoughts. Al Snow comes in to back up Maven, and Devon says he will get his salvation. So kind of sets up a little match for later between Reverend Devon and Maven. So
really easy setup, though. Listen, it was pretty random, right? You know, and he's asking Tori out, and she's literally, you know, going through some stuff with Kidman and Tajiri. So Maven's trying, I like your shoot your shot, because that's what he's doing, a little creep, trying to be a creeper, right? And the fact that she says yes too easily, I thought that was a little, I don't know what that was all about, but I thought it was an easy way to set up a match with Devon calling him out for being a creeper. So yeah, it's inoffensive. It's fine.
Yeah. She just broke up with Tajiri and now she's going on a date with Maven. Like, I feel like Tori could, you know.
Well, I wonder if it's going anywhere, too. I wonder if it's leading anywhere, because this is kind of it between her and Maven tonight. So I wonder.
But, you know, I got to say, she might be able to do better, you know, like, you know, Tori Wilson. I feel like you should be going she could probably get the top dogs, you know. I don't think she has to be going out with Maven.
Well, she could definitely do better. It's kind of like Stacy Keebler back in the day with David Flair. What are we thinking here? You know? So.
All right. So we get, oh man, I love this random appearance. Hurricane is backstage dressed as a reporter, and he confronts Funaki about the notes that he's been finding. And Funaki finds one on Hurricane's back, and it says that Hurricane's going to get a title shot. So. Again, very random, but at least entertaining because you got a random Funaki appearance.
Well, and I also like the Greg Helms thing. I like how they've kind of switched that Superman Clark Kent scenario on him. So that's something different at least, right?
Yeah, he's an example of somebody getting sort of a goofy gimmick, but he's can kind of pull it off. He's good enough and has enough charisma as opposed to like Planet Stasiak, where just, you know, is immediately in the toilet.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, we're still backstage, and we get a Chris Jericho interview, and he says tonight, basically the crux of his whole promo here is that he is, you know, that everybody's used to seeing the Ayatollah of rock and roll, the rock star persona, the cool guy, but that tonight he wants to send a message and he's going to show his true self, that that's not all what he's about, and that he's going to put Triple H out, which I really like this promo. I like that he put over that he's going to be more aggressive. I think it fits the stipulation that he has coming up at the pay-per-view, that it's a Hell in a Cell and that it's supposed to be violent. So he's trying to show this kind of the other side of himself. And I think it kind of fits his recent actions of, you know, attacking Triple H and that sort of thing. I just like kind of like what we always say with Angle, where Angle does a lot of goofy stuff, but he always gets across that he's a legit badass. And I thought this is a good way of trying to do that with Jericho, like showing that he's not just this, you know, kind of rock star guy, but that he can, that, you know, he can kick Triple H's ass. So that was a good promo.
You know what? The note I made is I said, I wish I had this Jericho during his world title reign, because he has been the highlight of this ruthlessly aggressive era. And it's a shame he was a pawn for Stephanie and Triple H and their divorce and their dog dying. It's Jericho has been on fire post title reign. And to your point, I liked it, and it was a simple promo. And I'm really liking this era of Jericho. It's really, really, really fun to watch.
Yeah, he and Angle are definitely carrying it. They're like that perfect mix of just enough chicken shit, but and just enough badass that you want to heal off.
Yeah, they are the perfect heels to build SmackDown around, and they have done a wonderful they've really done a good job with it. So, really good job.
All right, we have we have the mesh house set up a moment ago with Reverend D-Von facing Maven over his impure thoughts. D-Von cuts a promo before saying that the crowd's going to donate as the deacon's going to come around and get money. So this match, pretty much D-Von works over Maven. Maven kind of makes his little babyface comeback, but then D-Von sneaks in a low blow and hits his new finisher, which is the saving grace, which is kind of an inverted DDT sort of thing, to win. This was like a filler match, just trying to continue to establish D-Von, because they basically think Maven's sort of expendable, I feel like, at this point. So
I went half star too. And, you know, Al Snow's definitely getting a career out of that Tough Enough. And, you know, Maven's getting some shine from that too. But, yeah, it's a half star. It's just here. And that's all I have to say about it. There's not much to say.
and Snow got rocked by Batista too. I hadn't noticed.
With the money box. Yes, with the money. Yeah, with the money box. Yep.
Yeah. This is nothing. Just to get Reverend D-Von a little shine and Batista on TV. But so
good couple wins for D-Von the last two episodes, though. So
yeah, I'm actually kind of surprised. He pinned Triple H last week. Big moment. I thought they would forget about him like immediately, but all right, so continue on. Stacy is getting ready. So this thing. So Stacy is getting ready backstage. She's kind of looking in the mirror in her robe, getting ready for a bikini contest. And a little person comes out of the cabinet under the vanity with a video camera and says that something about it being, I think it's like a Panasonic or something.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't even remember what he said, but he just says this whole thing about the camera and something about how she looks. And then he kind of goes back in the camera. And Stacy is actually kind of into it a little bit. She just kind of is like, okay, and like no sells and goes back about her business. I just didn't know what the hell this was supposed to be. I didn't know if it was like this weird ad for this Panasonic camera, but if it was, they didn't do enough. Like, I thought they might have put something on screen with a logo or something. It was just very strange. It was almost like surreal.
It was so random and came out of nowhere. Like, it shocked me. Like, I literally, like, I jumped when he jumped out. And, you know, listen, you can say what you want about Stacy Keibler. She's there to be obviously the object of men's affections, but she sells it very well and does a really good job with it of being that very loosey-goosey woman who's probably into pretty much anything that'll get her where she wants to go, including midgets. So this is a short, harmless thing, even if it's out of nowhere. But Stacy's really good at her character, too, for what they're trying to make her. She does a really good job with it, I think.
Yeah, I agree. For what she's given, for sure. So, speaking of that, we head out for the bikini contest after that odd exchange. I made the note that Stacy, she gets it. So Taz kind of plays the role of the MC, sort of in the king role. He's like, he basically acts like king, but not quite as like horny and pervy as king. He's like into it, but not really completely creepy like King. He's just sort of like, oh, check it out, women in bikinis. Like, he's not quite as drooling as King. But Stacy did seem to be a good, like, foot taller than him when she got in the ring, because she's a pretty tall lady. So it was a funny visual. So we come out. Tori comes out. And, of course, before she can reveal her bikini, Tajiri comes out and covers her to, of course, some huge heel heat, as the crowd obviously wants to see Tori's bikini. Stacy, in a nice heel move, says she's amused and says that they wishes that they could see it. And then in another completely random thing, Trish shows up because they justify this, that she's the champion, so she could show up on both shows. Unfortunately, she says she forgot her bikini, so she's just in her underwear, and she shows the crowd. That way the crowd could be happy that they at least got to see some titties, and that was pretty much it. And that was your, I guess it continued the Tori Tajiri stuff, but it kind of just seemed like something to fill some time, I guess. And I guess Stacy as a heel. Well, I guess it does lead to something in a second. That's right.
Yeah, I mean, it sells Stacy as a heel, but it also continues somewhat in some avenues, selling the Tajiri angle with Tori, right? You know, and I don't know. The other note I made, you made a note about Stacy's side. I said Trish looks like Little Beaver next to Stacy, because there's such a huge, like, height distance. So, yeah, you know, I can't say I'm too excited about a Trish versus Stacy feud, but this appears to be setting that up, and I guess it makes sense since they're the two biggest women in the company in terms of their brand, so it makes sense. It's just nothing excitable, though, that to look forward to in my eyes.
Okay, so we'll get into that. So immediately following this, Vince speaks with Reverend Devon, is speaking with Reverend Devon about the match he just had, but he's interrupted by Stacy, who's upset and says that she wants a title match. Vince immediately seems hesitant because you could tell he doesn't really see her as a wrestler. Honestly, you could read by his face, but he agrees because he wants to keep her happy. But then he gets the bright idea that if she wants to have the match, she's going to need Reverend Devon and the Deacon to provide protection. In a funny line, Reverend Devon says, "You want the Reverend to buy condoms?"
That was good.
Which is it's very Vince humor. Anyway, so we kind of set up this title match. So to your point a second ago, a little bit of a disappointment if you were, at least as far as a wrestling match, if you're expecting we're going to get maybe Trish and Jazz or even Trish and Molly on the pay-per-view. We are apparently going to get Trish and Stacy, who Stacy is really not known for her wrestling acumen by any standard. And it kind of puts the bigger thing with this, honestly, is that it puts the Dudleys on a crash course the first time that they've really met up with each other. But I feel like it's a little forced. Like, I feel like it's a little bit too early to have them meeting back up. So I'm not super hot on that. Well, I don't know how you feel.
The same exact thing they did at Backlash with Simmons and Bradshaw. Like, you want to keep these partners away from each other, but now this would be two pay-per-views in a row where you had ex-tag team partners involved in some form or fashion in the match that they're involved in. So they need to get away from this and give people their own identity, and they can't seem to steer away from that when they get to the pay-per-views.
And it kind of reveals to me why they sort of shoehorn Bubba in with Trish to kind of get this happening, to make sure the Dudley boys can meet. But it's just, to me, too early to pull the trigger. Like we said, Devon is just starting to establish himself as a character. It's like they can't let go. It's like, you got to let them, if you're going to break them up, let them be on their own for a little while, because it's not enough time for it to feel like a big deal, really.
Exactly.
No patience. But, right, we had another match, Rico versus Rikishi, which is stemming from Rikishi has been pretty much torturing Rico by stink-facing him. They had a match last week. I think it was like a six-man or something. I don't really remember. They fight so much. So this was a squash city. This was pretty much Rikishi squashing, no pun intended, Rico. So I don't know. I went a half star on this. It was just Rikishi squashing Rico. It's about what you would think. So I don't know if they plan to go anywhere with Rikishi, if they're trying to build him for anything or what.
Yeah, I went a half star too. And I also thought the tag team champions looked really, really dumb in this. They did not make them look good at whatsoever. And then the only other thing I had to note is Rikishi putting on the Michael Jackson hat and dancing. So this whole thing just seems so forced and out of nowhere, and, you know, just move on. And that seems to be the theme tonight with these matches on SmackDown. It's just so it's more angle heavy than anything, and these matches are just kind of there just to fill the other time. So very different.
Yeah, like you said, he dances like with full pyro after. It was very random.
Very random.
To think that they would have pyro for a random Rikishi dance when pyro is like reserved for like WrestleMania now. It's amazing.
Yeah.
All right. We head backstage again and we see Vince is rubbing on Stacy, and then Billy Chuck and Rico come into the office, Vince's office, and Vince says he's ashamed. Said they will face Rikishi and a partner he chooses at Judgment Day. And again, this is just, I guess it might be okay, whatever it ends up being, but it just shows what the tag division is right now, because this is, I mean, the definition of just throwing something together at the last minute so you can put the tag titles on pay-per-view. So, great.
Poor Vince can't get no sex tonight, man. Poor guy.
Yeah. Yes. But it's not happening.
Nope.
All right, so now we have a Triple H promo backstage. to, like you said, a lot of promos too, a lot of backstage segments in between the filler matches too. So this Triple H interview, he says in the Hell in a Cell, he's basically responding to Jericho, says when they get in Hell in a Cell, it's not going to be anybody except he and Jericho. He references how he put Foley out of his career, and then Edge walks up and says their business isn't finished. He tells Edge they should win a few titles. In a very savage line, Edge says, yeah, well, if he wants to win some titles, maybe he could sleep his way to the top like Triple H did.
Fantastic.
Which I thought was, Ed. And then Triple H says, you know, they'll have their time later on, but tonight they need to focus on Jericho and Angle. So, these are good interactions between, I'm glad Edge came, because I'm glad it didn't just end up being like a 4-minute Triple H promo, where he says something in 4 minutes that could have been said in 45 seconds. So I thought Edge coming in and that whole interaction. And it just builds a little tension for the match later tonight. Like, are they going to be able to get along, which is a tried and true, you know?
Yeah, little well, it's tried trope. And true, but it also makes me – I actually want to see these two wrestle, though, because they've had some really good mm-hmm. interactions tonight. And I love Edge just walking up and saying, hey, I just want to reiterate something with you. We still have a problem. And then Triple H telling Edge to win some belts. And then, to your point, that savage line about the owner's daughter. I mean, this stuff with these two has been really, really gold tonight. So mm-hmm. not only does it sell the tag team match, but it's telling me that I want to see this match down the line.
Yeah, like when I say tried and true, I mean it in a positive way. Like sometimes in wrestling, to me, the things that are tried and true, if done well, are like the best, you know? So, I agree with you. And it again shows confidence they have an Edge, or where they see Edge, that they're letting him say these lines, you know, that he's able to do these lines in the promo with Triple H, that they're giving him that spot and letting him say that, you know, I think tells you, you know, what they see in the future for him.
And the confidence they haven't shown in Bradshaw on the other brand. So it's really interesting dynamic between the two.
Yep. Good point. Okay, so after that, we head to the ring, and we have a cruiserweight triple threat, which is going to be Tajiri versus Kidman versus Hurricane. We get the jerk boob cover Tajiri. Him and Kidman start off the match, and Hurricane is not even in there yet. They start without him, so Hurricane kind of shows up late. We get a notable spot. So this is a very short match. I thought it was a cool spot where Kidman kind of runs the corner, knocked out the Hurricane, and then sort of hit the shooting star press, but then he gets pulled out. Like, I thought this whole match, for as short as it was, they did a good job. It being a triple threat, you know, you kind of, they have to work the thing where one guy's clear out of the picture, but I thought they did a pretty good job of doing the transition smooth. Like when one guy is going to be out the ring, kind of working that in where it didn't seem like a guy was napping for too long. So the only bad part, it just didn't have enough time to build any story for me. What'd you think, Sean?
This match really pissed me off, because you have Kidman.
Yeah, same.
You have Tajiri and you have the Hurricane, and you have the potential to have a three-way banger for the cruiserweight division. And then we get this. So it pissed me off, and I can't give it more than 1.25, because the talent you have in this, and this is what you're going to give them. It's no wonder, as time goes on and as you think about the cruiserweight title, that this is what they do. They do multi-man tags just to get everybody on the show, and they're usually quick spot fest. But this is like below a quick spot fest. And, you know, the random win for Hurricane is crazy to me because we've now traded belts back and forth so many times in the last month that the belt's kind of irrelevant. So I gave it 1.25, but yeah, this really pissed me off.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Yeah, Hurricane wins with the chokeslam and he wins the title, which, like, yeah, I went star and a half, so I'm not far from you. But if I that I dislike the way it was done, it would be way lower than 1.5. It's like the women's title switch, but even the women's title switch, like I said, at least if you're in the know, you know that they had some tying their hands with that, with the injury. Where this, it's like you said, they've been so good. Like, especially to Jerry Kidman feud, and even Hurricane, when he's been inserted, has been really good. It just feels like, why switch the title in this 3-minute or whatever it was match in this triple threat on this random TV show where it's, and even this sort of feels like a throwaway episode. A lot of this has been filler. I just don't get it. To me, this should have been given, it needs to be either on pay-per-view or if it's going to be on TV, wipe out some of the stupid, you know, why we don't need Rico Rikishi. Give these guys like a 15-minute match and at least let them put on like a pay-per-view level match on TV or something. It's like you said, like I figured you would agree that it's just, it makes the title feel like it's not important. Like, yeah, it's
to
nothing.
Your point, imagine the banger these guys could have had on the opener for Judgment Day. And yeah, it's frustrating. It's very frustrating.
Yeah, I just don't get – I'm baffled to know what would be the thinking. I don't know what you're trying to accomplish. Because the thing is you can't even frame it as like, well, we wanted a killer cruiserweight match because it wasn't. You didn't give enough time to be a killer match, so it's not really showcasing them. It just feels like – more filler with a title attached to it. So, yeah, it sucked.
Correct. Yep, sucked.
Yep. All right, so Hulk Hogan heads out, and he soaks in the crowd reaction, and he gets a huge crowd reaction. So I would say for a good 3 to 5 minutes, he just sits there and soaks in the crowd, and the crowd is just like, I mean, super hot for him. Like,
it's
just
on
give
par
him a huge
with WrestleMania when he faced The Rock. I mean, it's off the chain. Good, how great this is.
Yeah, Canada just, man, they love Hulk Hogan.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, and like, he looks legit emotional. I mean, it could be some of him playing it up, brother, but I think
he does
did.
It great.
Yeah, I mean, good. If he was, I mean, I think at least part of it had to be legitimate. So I think it is a good moment. You know, I thought it was a pretty cool moment, especially just on the SmackDown, and just kind of knowing that the nostalgia thing seems definitely like has a short shelf life. I thought this was a cool moment. He just kind of comes in and says that this whole thing has been a dream, which is good because the real world sucks and this is his dream world. Like, he almost seemed like he was shooting a little bit in this one, like talking about that, because I wouldn't be surprised if that's a little bit how he really felt. He says he knows Hulkamania is going to live forever. And so at this point, I will get to the second part, but I thought it was a good promo, mostly due to the crowd. And I thought it also was just kind of prophetic in like where he's going, you know, almost like his swan song promo as on this Hulkamania title run, you know? So before we get to the next part, what did you think about this whole, the first part?
Well, the first thing is, I mean, just to show the negative when he came out, you know, obviously he doesn't need the oxygen mask and a neck brace anymore. So that was a little yeah. off-putting for me coming out of the other night, but at any rate, you can't take away the crowd response. You can't take away the emotion. The whole first half of this was really well done. He talks about how the world sucks and 9/11. And, you know, it seems like he's really authentic. And if he's not, Hogan's an amazing actor because he really showed authenticity here and showed real good emotion. I really, really enjoyed this first half of this.
Yeah, same. And it just shows, I mean, you know, the things that would happen with Hogan in real life, you know, but it just shows kind of the connection still at this point that people had with the Hogan persona and the, you know, the Hulk Hogan character. So, yep. But before we can get too cheerful, Vince interrupts. He comes down and he said that this is not reality. Hulkamania sucks. And that Taker on Raw dragged him around like roadkill. He says that Hulkamania has a terminal illness, cancer. Which I'm not really sure what that meant, but the crowd started singing. So I don't know if you got this, Sean, but I weren't really sure what they were getting at because they started singing like the na 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 goodbye thing. I didn't really understand what they were.
I didn't really get that either. That was really, yeah, I wish I could explain it. It seemed out of nowhere, so I have no answer for that.
Yeah, Vince kind of plays it off by saying, yeah, yeah, we'll be goodbye to Hogan on Sunday or whatever. Like, you know, he just plays it off. But I didn't, because, I mean, it almost makes it seem like they want Hogan to go away and lose, but that can't be true because they just, like, had this big Hogan love fest. So, yeah, it was very confusing. I don't know what y'all are getting at Montreal. So, yeah, but Vince says that he created Hulkamania and that he can destroy it. That it will be red and yellow, red for the blood he will shed and yellow for the streak on his back. And then he slaps Hogan in the face. And then Hogan kind of pops him, tears his shirt, and then kind of drops the leg to a big reaction. So kind of a wild Vince promo. It was a little unexpected for me because they really haven't had a ton of interaction up to this point going into the pay-per-view. Like, they're not feuding or anything. I just thought it was really interesting. He definitely got into like some over the top Vince stuff with the cancer and red for blood and yellow for the streak on his back and all that kind of stuff. I just thought it was weirdly timed, but it definitely sows some seeds for a feud between them later on down the line.
Yeah. So here's my spin on this. I feel like this is a segment that people have been dying to see since Hogan came back. Like, mm-hmm. This is the epitome. We wanted to see Vince and Hogan, and on this show, in the spot, yes, it seems so random. I mean, he's getting ready to face Taker. And here's what I love again that SmackDown's doing. They set the tone for a possible Edge Triple H match down the line beyond the pay-per-view. They're also doing the same thing here where they're showing, hey, down the line, we could be seeing Vincent Hogan. So I like the premeditated, maybe future booking insight that they're giving us, mm-hmm. where we're not really seeing that on the other show. Here, I feel like they're booking with purpose and booking for the future. I really, really like this. I thought Vince's promo, again, as random as it was awesome. I thought Hogan's reaction was awesome. The crowd was super, super, like, nuclear hot. So, again, I mean, tonight on these promos, you know, SmackDown is on fire, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like I said, besides the timing, but as far as an actual promo, and it makes sense as a feud, you know, like that Vince would try and claim that he created it, and you know,
perfectly
the whole
natural
idea of,
that's what makes sense.
Yeah, and that it's the whole thing of this whole Hogan comeback has been about the idea of Hulkamania and this nostalgia thing. So I agree with you. The way you mentioned it, like, yeah, it could just be like I almost feel like it maybe would have fit after the pay-per-view, but now that you say it, it does make sense, sort of like as long-term planning. I can get on board with that.
I like it. I like seeing the future. Yeah. I really like that as part of my booking. So,
yeah. All right, so we go to our main event, our big tag match between Angle and Jericho and Edge and Triple H. And a nice touch. I like how Angle brought the piece of Edge's hair to the ring that he cut off early in the night, like as a trophy. I thought that was awesome. It reminds us of the stipulation, which is cool. So they actually start the match before Triple H even heads out, with Edge trying to take on Jericho and Angle. And so Triple H has to kind of skip his big long entrance and run out, which was kind of cool. So they kind of do sort of standard like tag formula stuff at first where they kind of cut off the hot tag and then but eventually Angle sort of Edge is kind of working face in peril and then he gets cut off one time but then he goes for it again and Angle accidentally pushes him into Triple H. Triple H gets the hot tag but then we get a ref bump and that's when everything sort of breaks down. And so everything sort of breaks down and gets chaotic. And Triple H and Jericho kind of brawl out into the crowd all the way underneath kind of the overhang. And that's pretty much the last we see of them. Angle gets a chair and Edge ends up spearing the chair. And Angle actually wins clean with the Angle slam and he gets the pin. So what was your thoughts on this one before I get into my analysis, Sean?
Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. There's a lot going on here. Again, the running top rope suplex that Angle does will always be a cool visual for me. I love that spot. Mm-hmm. And the thought I had in this match, too, and I said it earlier about Angle and Jericho, compare them as top heels to the top heels on Raw. It's not even close. Like, Angle and Jericho right now are at the top of their game and on fire, and they really are heels that you want to see really get beat up. I liked the long heat segment on Edge with the suplexes and chops. And the other thing that really I like is Edge feels like he belongs here. And he feels like he belongs with these guys at this moment in time. And he's getting some really good shine working with them. And then we have the finishers traded. And you get the trophy ref bump. And, you know, you get Jericho and Triple H fighting. And then Angle gets – and then you get the end of the match. But I really enjoyed the match. I thought it was solid. I feel really great for Edge. I love Angle and Jericho. These guys are clicking on all cylinders and where they're trying to go with each other. I gave it 2.75 stars for me. This is probably, for me, my match of the night, which we'll talk about a little bit later, but I really enjoyed this match.
Yep, I'm right there with you. I had the same rate. I had 2.75. Like I said, it was sort of standard tag formula until they did the whole breakdown where everybody pairs off. But I think with these guys, a tag formula is not the worst thing because it's just executed so well because you just have so much talent in the ring with these guys. I really like the intensity and the energy of it because all of them sort of have issues. You know, they're all heading into feuds on the pay-per-view, and even Edge and Triple H have a little bit of tension that's kind of lingering in the back of your mind, even though it doesn't really, you know, show up in this match. It's still sort of something you're thinking about. So I just like that there's some heat behind everything, that there's issues going on, and there's a purpose for all this. And I actually kind of like the visual of Triple H and Jericho kind of brawling out because it's, you know, not directly related to Hell in a Cell, but it's sort of a chaotic way to end for them going into the pay-per-view when they're going into kind of a violent, chaotic sort of match. And I just overall, I didn't think it was a bad final push for the pay-per-view. Like, if you're going to have this as your last image before the pay-per-view, you have all your guys, you know, you have four guys that are all major feuds, you know, in a pretty hot tag match. So I didn't think it was a bad decision to put this on as your final match going into the pay-per-view. So, yeah, I was right there with you, 2.75. So,
yep, SmackDown did a great job of selling their main matches at the pay-per-view with this.
Yeah. So let's talk about our overall rating for SmackDown, because I think talking through it, I had rated it a little low, but I think I'm rethinking my rating now. So what did you rate the whole episode?
So here's what's interesting. As I was talking through it, I was like, man, the match quality is really, really bad, but here's the thing. I actually gave it a 6 out of 10. And, you know, we'll talk about this, but the matches as a whole tonight between both shows were really, really subpar. But what we really got was some good promo. Like this episode of SmackDown, you have a great opening promo segment. You have a great main event, really great Vince and Hogan that sets up the future. You get the same thing with Ed and Triple H. And like I said earlier, I like booking that gives me a glimpse of the future beyond what we're seeing right this minute. And it hooked me. And it's unlike Raw, which seems very directionless and lost. So for me, I give it 6 out of 10 because I know where they want to go. I know where they're going. The promos are good, even though the matches suck. For me, it's 6 out of 10.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on this one because originally I think I was letting that middle portion that's felt very fillery on this.
Exactly.
Makes kind sense. Of drag it down for me. But then when I think about how much stuff was good and just – the angles are just overall just hotter on SmackDown. Like, you know, like these main event angles they have with Jericho and Triple H and then Edge and Angle, it's way hotter than Flair and Austin.
Promos are hotter than the matches. It's the promos. And, you know, if I could do a cheap plug here, it reminds me of Crockett era booking, right? So when we watch it at the NWA show that you were just on with me, it's very promo heavy. The matches not so much, but the promos sell everything. And to me, this reminded me a little bit of that because the promos sell everything in this episode of SmackDown.
Yeah. And it's, you know, you did get a lot of junky matches, but you at least got the good match to close it out. Like the feature match, to your point, to make the, you know, the NWA comparison, your feature match, your main event was, you know, a pretty solid, you know, good borderline, you know, moving towards very good match. So yeah, with some juice behind it, you know, with some feuds behind it. So I think I'm with you. I think I'm 6 out of 10. I think I was focused too much on the crap on this show, even though the crap is not really quite as, it doesn't make up a huge chunk of the show and, you know, all things considered. So I think I'm with you. 6 out of 10.
Excellent.
All right. So we'll head to our awards, and I think we're probably going to be pretty close on these. So best match, I have the one we just talked about, the SmackDown main event, the tag match.
Same.
Yep. Best moment, I had the Hogan segment on SmackDown with the crowd response, and then the Vince promo.
Same for me, and I put 18 years in the making. So if you look at the debut at 84, for me, this promo was 18 years in the making, and I loved it.
Yeah, I think you could argue maybe the opening stuff on SmackDown
yes.
in a vacuum Like for in the context of the show might have been up there, but I think this edges out for just the historical kind of.
Those were the two I debated between. You're absolutely right about that.
I think the Vince, I think if it was just Hogan with the crowd, you'd probably give it to the opening segment. But when Vince comes out and you get that whole deal, that's kind of takes to the next level. So LVP on this one, I was kind of struggling on this one because I feel like there's nobody who's like, I've been giving it to Stasiak, but I feel like it's like he's, I don't want to just keep giving to him because honestly, it's not like he's given a whole lot to go with. So I don't know. I kind of went with Bubba just because, I don't know, he's been pissing me off lately. So I don't know.
Well, I know Bubba's been, I went with Stasiak again. It's almost like you have to name this award the Stasiak Award at this point. but I had to go with Stasiak. Listen, even the Bubba match, I enjoyed the first part of it until everything broke down. But I can't not choose Stasiak. I can't.
Yeah, I understand. So, yeah, we might have the least valuable planet. Could be.
Yeah. You can still do LVP.
Yeah. So, best show, I have SmackDown.
100% SmackDown.
Yeah, it's just, in some way to retire, it's just a smoother watch. I don't know, it's just breezier. It just doesn't drag, I find, as much as Raw does for some reason. Well, I mean, I know the reasons, but. top five. So we'll run down our top five. I'll let you go first, Sean. Why don't you just give me all five, and then we'll discuss
them. So this was tough because I had to knock somebody out that should be here, but then I had to rethink it. So for me, I have Edge, Triple H, Hogan, Vince and Jericho, which bumped out Angle because initially I had Angle instead of Hogan. But as we rewatched this, I had to pick Edge and Triple H because of the opening segment. I had to pick Vince and Hogan, and I had to also pick Jericho because I thought his individual promo was really, really good. And unfortunately, I had to bump Angle out, but those were my five.
Yeah. So, man, the more I think about it, I'm pretty much with you. I had Jericho, Hogan, Edge, Angle, and I had Flair on here, but I almost feel like I'm grading him on a curve just because I was so happy to see him not just be quiet, mopey Flair that I maybe, and I did like that Hogan match that he had on Raw. So I'll give Flair the Triple H could sit out for once. He'll be okay. But I'll give the rub to Flair just because he had a good match and it was nice to see him have some energy and not just be, you know, whiny and mopey for the first time in 2 months. So,
well, yeah, and he had to carry him. So, he had to be uncomfortable in his role for many, many weeks. So, it's fair to give it to Flair.
Yeah, but I know what you mean. Yeah, it's tough. You'd think five guys is not many, but it's hard because to me, Angle and Jericho are almost a lock every week. So it's like I have three spots, kind of.
It was so hard for me to knock out Angle. That was tough. So
I just him with the hair was so good. I loved him carrying around that piece of hair all night. Is so good.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, that pretty much wraps us up for the show, Sean. So I'm headed down the road to Judgment Day. So we'll see how Judgment Day 2002 holds up. I'm interested because I feel like every match has something behind it, which is always good. At least something. Might not be the best, but it's got some kind of heat behind it.
Yeah, I'll absolutely be watching along with you guys. So yeah.
Okay, so Sean, I know one thing you for sure want to plug is the new pod, NWA Crock and Roll, which is an amazing name too, by the way.
Well, thank you. I won't tell you what the first name was with it. It was going to be, I forgot what it was going to be, but it's a really bad first name. But it's a great name. And, you know, it's a really fun pod to do. And Jake is our first guest on there where we go back and we rewatch the Saturday night shows from the Crockett era. And then what we also do is we'll randomly throw in matches from their syndicated shows because the syndicated shows also have a lot of great in it in terms of match quality. But our first episode is from April of 1985. So that's the first month that Crockett owned the NWA. So really, really fun listen. Debuted today as of this recording. So by the time you hear this, we'll be getting ready to rev up until the month of May. So that'll be our second podcast there. So Dr. G, me, and Kyle McDougall, obviously on the first pod, we had you. On the second episode, we will have Matt Souza. So we also have, we're kind of calling it our rotating fourth horseman as we get into this. So going with that NWA lingo. So yeah, really excited about that pod for sure. And then we also have Chicken Salad. We just recorded Chicken Salad. So that'll be coming up probably sometime around the time you hear this. So where we do SummerSlam 93, that's fun. We have Highway to the Impact Zone, which by the time you hear this, I'll probably be up on that too. I have a Laugh in Theater, a Saturday night special coming up with the TV title. And I finally do have a Twitter handle, so you can follow me at NWA Crock and Roll. So that's what I got going on, Jake.
Yeah, because I would say too, I know probably the main appeal of the Crock and Roll pod is sort of the nostalgia factor, but I would add that I would not only look at it as a nostalgia thing. If you're somebody that didn't really grow up watching that, I would, as somebody who did the first episode and I haven't watched, you know, I haven't really sat down and watched a lot of the TV like we do, like we did for that podcast, but I would highly recommend following along if you've never watched that era of wrestling, like the TV. Like if you've only watched matches here or there, I would highly recommend going through and following with the pod and watching the TV, because it's just, to me, it's just sort of a masterclass on putting together like wrestling TV and the way they build angles, and it's, and just kind of that style, those old style of promos and stuff. So that would be my pitch for it.
I appreciate that. That means a lot. So thank you for that. And you know, and I can sit there and recap the shows, and we can recap the shows, but watching it at the same time, you also see the facial expressions and everything. So there's so much good in it. I highly recommend go back and watching it, like Jake said. So thank you for that, Jake. That was good.
Yeah, no problem. But like I said, it's just, it's not just nostalgia, I guess, is my main point. So other than that, we have a ton of stuff on the North-South feed. We have Wrestling War Zone, where Chad and Justin are going through the Monday Night Wars era, which I'm getting excited because they're a little ways away, but they're creeping towards the NW era, which I think is going to be really interesting to listen to.
I can't wait for that. Yeah, that'll be great.
Extreme Three-Way Dance, where John, Jenny, and Justin are going through, and JT are going through ECW, basically from the very beginning. I think they're in 95 right now. Carolina Dreamin', which kind of goes along with Sean's podcast, and where Chad's going through just sort of cherry-picking some different matches from Crockett in the 80s for the GWCW project, Fighting Spirit of 06. That's also a Chad joint, where he's going through 2006 and basically pretty much any promotion, North American wrestling, and going through, just kind of venturing through that year. Jeff Learns Wrestling, which is always good, where Jeff is, you know, learning about wrestling for the first time with JT. No Holds Bar, where Aaron and JT go through just kind of different variations of usually ranking things, where there'd be, you know, right now I think they're working on the worst SummerSlam match of all time. They kind of have a tournament going, so they discuss that. The Year That Was is an awesome solo podcast Aaron does, where he watched every single pay-per-view in WWE history, and now he's sort of ranking them and discussing them. And he's even, like, even as a solo podcast, like, Aaron is super entertaining. He's so high energy. I love listening. Yeah. That's one of my favorite things to listen to right now.
The TNA pod is off the chain with him as the host. He is just off the chain. So really good listening to him on his pods.
TNA never dies, so they're going through TNA from the very beginning. And Aaron's also got Montreal to Memphis, where him and Reg talk about kind of more of a potpourri of just whatever topics they feel like. So stuff dropping pretty much every day. For me, I do PTB NXT over on the Place to Be Nation feed with Jenny and Tim, which is always a fun thing to go through. We just did a new episode recently. And then also, like Sean mentioned, I do the Highway to the Impact Zone, where we cover the Impact era of TNA, which has been quite an experience for me so far. Definitely a different, for you, Sean, that's quite a juxtaposition of podcasts from the NWA Crock and Roll and the TNA. I mean, even though they're both technically NWA, I guess. But
well, it's definitely guardrail to guardrail watching TNA, then the worst pay-per-views of all time on Chicken Salad, then going into NWA. So it's definitely a diverse group of pods for sure.
Yeah. So anyway, on the North-South feed, we have great stuff dropping every single day. So be sure to check it out. Thanks for listening to this podcast. I'm always appreciative when I hear people reaching out and talking about how they've been following along with this. And that's an era they kind of never really experienced. Even people that I've heard that are like, I feel like they've watched every bit of wrestling that's ever existed, are kind of watching this. So that's always cool. So other than that, Sean, thanks for coming back. As always, I will have you back again, of course.
Absolutely. I enjoy it, Jake. I love this podcast. So thanks for having me.
Thank you. And so that will wrap up this episode of the Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast. So I will see you at Judgment Day 2002. Bye-bye.
Their choices, and they'll never know what it means to steal.